Hello, and welcome to Anaphylaxis UK's Let's Talk About Allergies podcast, where we provide expert answers to common questions about allergies and anaphylaxis. Our goal is to offer valuable insights on how we can all work together to make life easier and safer for those living with allergies.
Welcome back to Let's Talk About Allergies. Today's episode is the second in our Bee and Wasp Venom campaign series. I'm Mary, the Information Officer at Anaphylaxis UK, and I'm joined by our CEO, Simon Williams. Together, we'll be digging deeper into the world of venom allergy testing and immunotherapy with our expert guest, Dr. Andrew White. Following up on last year's insightful discussion with Dr. White, we'll be answering some of your questions that have come up since our last episode.
Dr. Andrew White from Plymouth NHS Trust, thank you ever so much for joining us. Once again, our super popular YouTube video last year, talking about a very similar sort of topic, and that's all around bee and wasp venom allergies. And it's been so popular, I mean, so many different questions. It's great to have you back as a guest, and we can have a chat about some of those questions that have arisen over that period of time. But I wonder, would you give us a bit of an overview, if you wouldn't mind, of what do you do every day as an allergy consultant? What is the kind of if there is a typical day in an allergy clinic?
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting me back again. Venom in immunotherapy and venom allergy is something I'm particularly interested in, and it's probably under-recognized in terms of the treatment options. It's often not known about, so. It's lovely to be here to speak about it. So in terms of being an allergy consultant, clinics are the mainstay of an allergy consultant workload. Clinics meaning patients come to the hospital and they see us for an appointment and they have some skin prick testing, maybe some blood testing, and go away hopefully with work towards a diagnosis, some treatment, some information and education on adrenaline injectors if they need those. And it's quite a mix of venom and food allergies, drug allergies, sometimes unknown allergies, anaphylaxis, where it's not been obvious what the cause is, and then we go on a bit of a diagnostic journey to try to come to an answer. So it's quite varied. The other big part of it is graded dose challenges. So where we think that someone probably isn't allergic to something, but we're not 100% sure because the testing isn't 100% certain, then we can bring someone in for a day to the unit, and we'll give them a tiny bit of something and then a bit bigger bit of something and then a bit more of something. And by the end of the day, we've given them enough to say, well, there you go, you're not allergic to that. We've ruled that out. You can go forth and eat it or take the medication or do whatever you need to do. So those are the two arms of it. And then associated with that is the immunotherapy treatment of hay fever or venom allergy as a sort of treatment option.
And as a venom allergy specialist, do you see the majority of your patients are people who might have venom allergy, or is it a big mix of patients with different allergies?
So it's a big mix. So my particular area within, I guess it's a subtype of venom immunotherapy, is the people with very severe venom reactions. And I have what we call a complex anaphylaxis clinic, which is for people who have particularly severe reactions or unknown reactions. So a lot of the venom sort of filter down into that clinic, but in general, I'm a general allergist as well, so I see all of the patients as well.
I'm just going to ask, sorry to interrupt, but presumably with a venom allergy, if you've been stung by a bee or a wasp, you know that that's the cause. It's not a food related, and then you get stung and then something happens.
No, absolutely. It is something we always think about, because being stung, you generally know, but you also get little prickles and scratches from things, and you might have taken a medication for a headache that day and then gone out and run around, or had a picnic and eaten your peanuts and then got stung by something, and in fact it's the peanuts. We do always think about the other things that could be potentially a cause, because we can't just latch onto one thing and assume it's that. But usually, yes, it's pretty obvious you get stung and then you have symptoms, and it's pretty obvious what that is.
And are there other insects that you could have anaphylaxis to their venom? So
For example, I have quite a few friends who would have really big and inflamed mosquito bites. And I was just wondering, is that like ever considered dangerous or a risk?
Yeah, so mosquitoes do cause itchiness. That's just one of the things they do. Some people are prone to more severe reactions in terms of large local reactions, can be hot and warm and itchy. There's a condition called Skeeter syndrome, where with large local reactions like that that are recurrent. It is possible to have anaphylaxis to mosquitoes. It's quite rare, but it can happen. I've not personally ever seen a case of that. So, I mean, it's pretty rare. Horseflies are the other one that people often wonder about, especially in rural areas where horseflies are, they hang around horses and deer and other sort of animals like that. The female horseflies need blood to complete the egg development, and so they bite into the skin and they suck blood. And so having a dribble of blood at the site is typical of horseflies compared to stinging insects otherwise. So, but allergy to horseflies, even large local reactions can be painful, but systemic reactions, anaphylaxis, is much rarer than you would think for that. Otherwise, bees and wasps of different sorts. The solitary bees and solitary wasps tend not to sting, but bees and wasps, the social bees and wasps that we normally know of and think of, do sting. Ants is the other group. There are various ants around the world that can sting. Not much in the way of ants that cause anaphylaxis, very occasionally, but they're not a major problem. But worldwide, yes, they're the other group of stinging insects.
Now, how do you know the difference, and does it make a difference at all if you've been stung by a bee or a wasp? Would you get the allergic reaction to both in the same way?
Not necessarily. It's unusual to be allergic to both bees and wasps. They have different venom proteins that cause reactions. So being allergic to a bee doesn't mean you're allergic to wasp and vice versa. There are a handful of people who are allergic to both, but they would generally know. In terms of whether you know you've been stung by a bee or a wasp, there's no perfect test, unless you're an entomologist. Often beekeepers will know what bees look like, so they'll know if they've been stung by a bee. But it's difficult sometimes because, firstly, you're distracted by the pain. Secondly, they're buzzing past quite quickly, so you don't get a good look at them. One of the clues can be if they leave a sting in situ, in the skin. Bees tend to do that. There is a type of wasp that can occasionally do that as well, so it's not perfect either. But if they leave a sting, then it's much more likely to be a bee than a wasp. Otherwise, knowing the being able to identify the insect is helpful because it does give a soft clue if we're not sure which venom to use for immunotherapy. But the testing is a little more important than in terms of hard evidence for which one to go for.
So if someone comes in to be tested for venom allergy, how many different types of venom would you test them for with the skin prick testing?
So generally two. We tend to test with honeybee venom and common wasp venom. So common wasps are Vespula. Vespula vulgaris is the particular type of wasp. And there's a licensed product for both of those, and skin testing extracts available for those. So we always test both because there is a possibility that you're allergic to both. It's possible that the insect you thought it was isn't the one that you're allergic to, and that in fact it was a different insect. So we always test to both honeybee venom and common wasp venom.
And if you were allergic to wasps, as you said, most of the time you wouldn't be allergic to both bees and wasps. Would a person who is allergic to wasps be able to keep bees, or would they be at a higher risk?
Yeah, there's no reason they wouldn't. The only caveat to that is that sometimes wasps can be predators of bees. So you may be more exposed to wasps, but there's no reason to avoid keeping bees simply because of a wasp allergy. You'll have your EpiPens available or Jext, whatever the auto-injector brand you have is.
Right. And what is the more common allergy? Is it bee or wasp venom allergy?
In the UK, it's wasp. Wasp is more common than bee. The general feeling is that bee venom is more severe than what bee anaphylaxis is more severe than wasp anaphylaxis, but either can be severe. And to be honest, in clinical practice, I don't really notice that difference the way it's supposed to be that way. But wasp venom is more common in the UK.
And on average, kind of week to week or month to month, how many patients would you see with a venom allergy?
It goes through cycles. Obviously, people are more likely to be stung and have reactions during summer and spring and into autumn. So we tend to get a little flurry of referrals towards the end of summer and into autumn. In terms of numbers, we have it depends on the center around the country. There aren't a whole lot of allergy centers, so it is slightly restricted where you can have it done. But for us in Plymouth, we serve all of Cornwall and Devon. So of that 1.5 million people or so, we have about 100 people on immunotherapy at any given time. So there are enough people that it's a busy service. When people need, I guess we'll come on to the dosing and the frequency and the commitment that it would involve shortly, but
sure.
But that's the general numbers for us in the Southwest, and it's probably proportional nationally. We do have a high rate of beekeeping down in the Southwest, so we do get a few more beekeepers than other places might.
But most people won't come into contact with bees or wasps. Most people won't get stung. So would you find out that you have an allergy on your first sting, or would it need to be multiple times, as if you were perhaps a beekeeper and you're in regular contact with bees?
You generally wouldn't. It's possible to have a reaction on the first sting, but in general, the way allergies develop is that you need to be exposed to something to become allergic, and then subsequently you react. You can be stung several times, and whether it's to do with being stung regularly and then a bit of a gap and you get stung and react, whether it's that sort of the gap bit that makes a difference, possibly, whether it's just a combination of other factors that happen to coincide at that particular time. But you do generally have to have been stung before. With beekeepers, interestingly, if you're stung more than 200 times per year, you're at lower risk of reaction. So actually there's a top end as well where you drop off. I mean, you have to try really hard to get stung more than 200 times, I imagine, beekeep without
very painful as well.
I wouldn't suggest aiming for 200 just for that benefit.
So as an average person, if you didn't beekeep and you spent a normal amount of time in the garden, but you had happened to be stung a couple of times, is there an average amount of times that you would have to be stung in order for an allergy to develop, as in, over 5 times or over 10 times, or could you still be at the same level of risk if you've been stung a handful of times?
It can be any number. A very common pattern is that people say, I've been stung a few times by wasps before, and then this time I had a big reaction. That's the general sort of been stung 2 or 3 times would be. I don't have a great deal of evidence for that, but that's my feeling of being the most common type of story that I would hear.
And would they naturally come to you for the test? And it's the testing we always get asked about, whether it's food or venom. So it's, lots of people also go down to the high street pharmacy and pick up some of these tests that are very unreliable. Is that the same with being wasp venom allergy? Going down to the pharmacy, picking something up off the shelf is not necessarily a good way of going about things.
No, the difficulty with allergy tests and the reason they're unreliable is firstly because the quality of the test you get what you pay for in a sense, and having off the shelf sort of products, much like buying things online, you may not get a good quality product that tells you the correct answer. Secondly, with allergy testing, what complicates it is that you can have positive tests but not be allergic and negative tests but still be allergic. So actually just having the number still needs some extra thought and sort of medical knowledge to then apply that to your specific situation in the context of your reactions. The other aspect is that the gold standard investigation for venom allergy is skin prick testing, which you can't really do outside an allergy unit, or at least a unit that can do skin prick testing. And that would be a unit that could then follow that up with venom immunotherapy if needed. So generally, we'd do a combination of skin prick testing, blood testing for allergic antibodies, and then there are some other more minor tests that we sometimes use.
And when you go for allergy testing, so you said they'll test the two types of venom, the bee and the wasp venom, and that's with skin prick test. So yeah. Is this something that could result in anaphylaxis, and is it something people need to be worried about before their appointment?
No, you don't need to be worried about it. In theory, there is a possibility of anaphylaxis, but it's very rare. I don't think I've ever seen it. The currently available skin testing product, the one that's most commonly used, just has skin prick testing. There are some formulations where intradermal testing is done. That's where it's the venom's diluted down a lot and then injected just into the skin rather than pricked through the skin. That has a slightly higher risk, but we start off with a drop on the skin because that's not essentially not going to cause anaphylaxis, and then we dilute it down. A bee or a wasp doesn't dilute it down before they inject you, so the risk of anaphylaxis if we dilute it down is much, much lower, and essentially in practical terms isn't a risk.
So there's no cure, but there is immunotherapy, and correct me if I'm wrong, but immunotherapy being a kind of a building up your tolerance. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah. So it's not a cure, but it's as close as you can get without being that, in a sense. The process, which I can explain in a moment, is quite a long commitment, but the effectiveness in bee and wasp venom is that in wasp venom, about 95% of people who've had anaphylaxis and go through venom immunotherapy, 95% will be protected against further anaphylaxis. So that's 1 in 20 who may still go on to have anaphylaxis, but that's 19 out of 20 that won't. With bees, it's less. It's about 80% or thereabouts. So it is less effective in that sense, but it's still very effective. 80% chance of no anaphylaxis is still pretty good. There are some conditions which can affect those numbers, but those are the generally quoted numbers.
And how does it work for a patient going in to have their venom immunotherapy? Is it injected under the skin?
Yeah, so we start off, the process is generally speaking a three-year process, so it's quite a long commitment. There are two phases to it. There's an updosing phase and then a maintenance phase. And on each of those, you'd come into an allergy unit. Usually you'd have taken an antihistamine beforehand, and we inject a bit of venom diluted initially and then working up to a final concentration. And it's injected under the skin in much the same way as some vaccines are, for example. Diabetics would be very familiar with that type of injection, just under the skin. And then we keep an eye on the person for an hour just to make sure they're not going to have any reaction, and they go off and enjoy their life until their next dose.
So each dose takes, what, roughly an hour, or is it longer?
Yeah, about an hour or so is the usual observation.
And could the venom immunotherapy cause anaphylaxis, or is it more mild side effects? And what are those side effects?
So we know you're allergic to the venom if you're coming in for venom immunotherapy, because that's the point. So we're giving you venom that we know you're allergic to, which is why we do it in the hospital. There are some pollen immunotherapy under the tongue, for example, and More recently, food immunotherapy can be given at home, but venom is done in a hospital setting. For that reason, there is a risk of anaphylaxis. The risk is, it's not consistent through the whole course. There are points like the early few injections, if you've had a big gap, if you're unwell at the time, there are reasons that the reaction might, the risk of reaction might change. Yeah, there is a reaction risk, and that's why we give it in hospital. In general, the most common reactions would be local reactions, either a sore arm, it's usually given in the back of the arm, a sore arm or itchy local reaction at the site, sometimes fatigue and just a general sort of fluiness, because we're trying to tweak your immune system so it's not allergic anymore. And because we're tweaking your immune system does complain a little bit sometimes. And you get a fluey sort of feeling, but that's usually fairly transient and tends to wear off as you get used to the venom.
So we know there aren't that many allergy clinics across the country. I'm presuming not all allergy clinics will provide immunotherapy for being wasp venom. You'd have to look for a specialist centre, would you, as you are in?
Yeah, almost all allergy units will give venom immunotherapy. It's one of the core business. It's part of the IQAS accreditation requirements. It's not essential, but almost all would, to varying degrees in terms of size and referral numbers and that sort of thing. But yeah, they would. The BSACI website has find a clinic search, and one of the fields in there is venom immunotherapy, so you can filter it by venom immunotherapy as for adults or children. It's more common in adults, children uncommon, but still does happen. But you can search for those and find a clinic that's closest to you that does offer that.
And who would be selected for venom immunotherapy? Which patients, how serious does the reaction have to have been?
So generally speaking, we would offer it to anyone with a systemic reaction, meaning anything distant to the site of the sting, anaphylaxis essentially. And anaphylaxis is defined by it affecting your airway, so tongue or throat swelling, shortness of breath, wheeze, stridor, which is a sort of noisy breath in, a hoarse voice, if that's prominent and a sort of laryngitis feel to it, then that's also important. Dizziness or lightheadedness, collapse, abdominal pain, gut sort of vomiting and abdominal pain, that's distant to the site of the sting, so that would still contribute to that sort of anaphylaxis feel about it. And people who are very highly exposed, like beekeepers, even with a milder reaction like widespread rash, it's distant to the site of the sting, and because of the risk of being stung again, that becomes a bit of a grey area, and we may discuss sort of individual risks and an individualised decision for that. But essentially, anyone with anaphylaxis should, in principle, start unless there are individual factors that affect that decision.
And would there be a long waiting time for the treatment?
It varies depending on the allergy unit. Ideally, no, because the benefit is achieved fairly quickly. So by the time you reach the end of the updosing phase, as you reach maintenance, your reaction rate is very low. So in fact, the earlier you start, the better. Waiting lists vary around the country, but ideally you'd start as soon as the diagnosis is made and the decision is made to treat.
Is there a connection between being wasp venom allergy and any other allergy? Are you more susceptible if you have an allergy to, I don't know, pollen, food pollen syndrome, you know, whatever it may be? Is it more likely, or is there no connection?
There's not really any connection. There's no way of predicting from that point of view whether you're likely to be venom allergic. Obviously, people do have pollen allergy and food allergy and so on just in the population. So there will be people with both, but you can't predict venom allergy from those other allergies.
And you mentioned as well, it's less likely for children to be allergic. And so in the way that children can grow out of certain food allergies, Can you grow out of, can you get natural immunity growing out of a venom allergy?
You can, yeah. So kids often outgrow an allergy. Children have a good prognosis, and venom immunotherapy is performed in kids. It is effective in kids, but it's less common than it is in adults because adults tend to have the more severe reactions. In adults, it does wear off over time. So a reaction more than 10 years ago means that you may no longer be allergic. So we wouldn't routinely give venom immunotherapy for reaction over 10 years ago, unless it was an extremely severe reaction or there's ongoing risk, or, and again, an individualized sort of decision on that. But it can wear off over time. So we may still reassess, but it's more pressing if it's in the last few years, a reaction.
So if it's quite historic, it's quite a long time ago, is it still worth getting the test, coming into the clinic, getting assessed to see whether you are or not?
I think more than 10 years ago, if you've not been stung and there's no other particular concern for being stung, then the need is less. It's certainly reasonable to talk to your GP, they can ask for advice from an allergy service in terms of whether or not further investigation might be warranted. Allergy services are very happy to give advice and guidance for individual patients if needed. So it's always worth asking if you're not sure. But especially if you've had a reaction in the last few years, then it's certainly worth being referred.
If you wanted to have venom immunotherapy done, but you didn't qualify to be put forward for it, but you had a fear yourself, could you have venom immunotherapy done privately?
There probably are places, people that do it privately, but it's best to have it done in a hospital setting. It's also not necessary if you've not had anaphylaxis. So you're putting yourself at risk of reacting to the venom immunotherapy when you may never have reacted to the venom itself.
And if you had to miss a venom immunotherapy appointment, is that a problem? And how do you avoid that when people are doing it for 3 years?
So I guess that comes back to the protocols that we use. There's the updosing phase and then the maintenance phase. The maintenance phase part is easier and a bit more consistent. It's essentially doses every 6 to 8 weeks for 3 years. It can be flexed. It does extend out in the latter part of that. And it is flexible. There are, within the product information and within the protocols, you can miss a dose and it doesn't have too much of an effect. If you miss more than one dose, or you're extending it by 1.5 times your usual interval, then we may need to reduce the dose and build back up again. But generally speaking, it's pretty flexible. That's the maintenance part. The updosing part, getting from 0 to 100 miles an hour at the beginning, is done in various ways. The current product, Alutard, has 7-week protocol, a 15-week protocol, and a 25-week protocol. That essentially refers to the number of weeks that you come in for doses. And so the 7-week clearly is a shorter period of time. That's done for people who need protection more quickly, especially people with, I guess, in inverted commas, ordinary reactions. People with much more severe reactions, the very severe reactions, would, according to the product information, have the 25-week protocol, and the 15 is the default. A lot of units do 7 by default because actually the risk is not that much different, unless they're very high risk for severe reactions. With the older product and around the world, there are protocols that can take 1 week or 5 days or 2 days or even 1 day or 4 hours. There's a 4-hour protocol as well that gets from 0 to the full dose over 4 hours. They have a much higher risk of reactions, as you might imagine. So the current product, just the way it's formulated, does need to happen over a number of weeks. Within those weeks, if you miss a dose, it affects it slightly more because you're still on the way up and you don't want to cause too many hiccups in the way up. But there are ways of modifying that. You need to set aside a couple of months of commitment-free
where you can go
time to get up for the up dosing, and then beyond that, it's flexible.
Great. And how long does venom immunotherapy last in terms of the level of protection it gives you? Is it lifelong, or would someone have to have venom immunotherapy again 20 years after their first dose?
It's possible. We don't know completely is the answer, and there's no really good way of predicting that. It's probably at least 5 to 10 years if you've achieved protection, and probably longer than that. But we don't routinely test, and we wouldn't routinely repeat the immunotherapy to maintain the protection because the risk is low of becoming allergic again. It's not zero. Anybody can become allergic to something at any time. So it's possible you have another reaction, but it is sort of medium term and probably long term protection once you've been through the program.
It's always fascinating to talk to you. I always learn something new. It's very, very interesting. Where next? You know, the advancements in technology and medicines. Is there anything new coming out? Is there anything that we can look forward to?
I think the new advances, there are two aspects, really. Firstly, finding the risk factors for anaphylaxis. Over the last 10-15 years, there's been a greater recognition of particular conditions called mast cell disorders, and especially mastocytosis, which does have a very high risk of severe venom reactions. So finding those people is important because that does have that and other implications as well. The other advance is in testing. Because as I said before, testing isn't perfect. You can be allergic and negative, or positive and not allergic. The people who are truly venom allergic but are negative on the testing, if you're negative on testing, it's hard to know whether or not there will be a benefit in giving the immunotherapy, because the product that we're giving you, you're negative to. So you're not allergic to it. We don't know what we're desensitizing you to. So there are newish tests that are coming along all the time to try to help look for lower level allergies that might not pop up on the existing tests. And then that would help us determine whether or not venom immunotherapy is something worth pursuing in that particular individual.
So I had a question, Andrew, about testing. I had a patient ask about bee venom allergy, as he had been tested a week prior to being stung for bee venom allergy, and he didn't test positive. And then the following week he was stung 4 times in a row because he was beekeeping, and he had swelling and hives, and his asthma, he had to use his inhaler as he had asthma. Mm-hmm. Is that unusual that his test didn't show that he was allergic to bee venom?
So that's exactly the type of case where these more detailed testing might be of benefit. There are a few reasons why that might be. Physiologically, the way allergy works is that your antibody-producing cells produce antibodies called IgE. Those float around in your blood, and that's where we can do the blood tests. But them floating around in the blood doesn't mean that they're actually anywhere doing anything sinister. But they can. So hence, you can be positive in the blood but not allergic. They then go and sit on the surface of mast cells, which are the cells that have histamine in them. It's sort of like granules, kind of like bubbles in a fizzy drink. And then as you have anaphylaxis, the bubbles pop to the surface, the histamine comes out, and you have your reaction. The IgE sits on the surface of the mast cells, and that's where we can put the venom and cause positive skin tests by putting it directly on the mast cells. But just having it on the mast cells doesn't mean that the mast cells are going to take much notice of it if you do get stung. So it may be that you have a positive test there and not be allergic. It may be that you have negative tests because you are allergic, but at very low level, and therefore lower level testing as it becomes available, as these new tests come along, might pick up the allergy there.
I understand what you're saying. And just following on from that, any common questions people ever ask you about it? Or
probably something that might be useful is what to make a note of when you get stung to tell the allergy service, because the questions that we often ask were, what were you doing at the time? Was it a hot day? Did you take any other medications? What had you eaten? That kind of thing that people often think, well, it's 3 years ago, I can't remember what I ate for breakfast that day. But it's useful just to make sure that there's no other compounding factor, the cofactors and that sort of thing.
Thank you very much. It's been a very, very interesting conversation. I've learned, as I say, a lot. As always, talking to you, I hope everybody else has too. It's a fascinating area and very often overlooked. We talk a lot about food allergy and very often neglect venom allergy and overlook the importance and significance it has in people's lives. So thank you very much. Really appreciate all you do for us. And the support and the help that you've offered to the web pages, information sheets, the infographics and all the other tons of stuff that we've now got on our website and given us a steer on a lot of that. So yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. That's been great.
Thanks for speaking to me.
We hope you enjoyed tuning in to today's podcast on this very important topic. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, you can subscribe to our podcast on your favourite podcast app, including Spotify and Apple Music. Finally, be sure to follow us on social media at AnaphylaxisUK to join in the conversation, and let us know if there are any questions you would like us to answer next time.